From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made on August 19th, 2015, outside the Boys and Girls Club on Genesee Street in Rochester. It was late at night, and a Stop the Violence basketball game had let out when suddenly gunfire erupted on the street into a crowd of people. A shocking scene at a place of peace, a place that promotes community and strength and support. Three young men were killed in that mass shooting: Jonah Barley, Johnny J.R. Johnson, Raekwon Manigault. Their lives ended that night, but the story did not. Eventually, police arrested several men in connection to the mass shooting. Johnny Blackshell Jr. was given three life sentences for murder. But how did he and his accomplices get a hold of the firearms they used in that mass shooting? And the victims were not just names, they were people: loving children, friends, a father. A new film tells this story, from the days before the shooting, how they got the firearms, to the trial and the loss, and now to the efforts of surviving family members to build a more positive community. The film is called Move. You can see it next week at the Little Theater, and you should. Our community needs this film, and my guests this hour include the filmmaker. Tam Little is here. Tam, I want to say congratulations on the film. I wish you didn't have to make it, but it is gripping and it is beautifully done. Thank you for taking the time to be here.
Thank you for having us today.
Also here is Anita Barley, the mother of Jonah, who died on that day. Anita, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And Len Torrey Johnson is the mother of Johnny J.R. Johnson. J.R. to you, you said.
Always J.R. to always. Everyone.
Always J.R.
Everybody who knew him, always J.R.
Well, I want to say to both of the mothers in studio, there's nothing I can say that makes any of this better, but I just want to say I admire both of you so much and the work that you're doing to make things as positive as I can. I'm so sorry for your loss. Thank you for taking the time to come in and for the work that you're doing. So I want to start with that. And I want to ask Tam Little, as a filmmaker, how you decided you wanted to tell this story at length here. When did that happen, and tell me about that.
Well, I initially talked to Ms. Johnson a few months after the shooting and had given her a call just to talk to her. And, I could tell that she was very upset about, you know, of course, her son. And she really indicated how, you know, she felt as though her son didn't have a legacy, and that just really touched my heart. And my husband is a filmmaker, and I had never I'd never touched a camera, and I said I wanted to do something to initially remember Johnny for his children. And then I met Anita and Tammy, and I said I want to also celebrate their sons as well. And so that's really how it all began, and it just burgeoned into something bigger than me and bigger than us.
Next week, Tuesday and Friday, there are screenings at the Little Theater. Tuesday, December 12th at 7 p.m. Friday, December 15th at 7 p.m. And Tam Little's going to do a Q&A session after each screening. Tickets for both screenings are $9, and they are available at thelittle.org, along with, of course, at the box office at the Little. So that's next Tuesday at 7 p.m., next Friday at 7 p.m., and I can't urge you enough to be there. To do that, the film, what Tam was just telling you is so true. I was so moved by the fact that the filmmakers decided that it was important for you to understand who these three young men were as people. And there's a lot of sadness, but there's a lot of joy that you see in those memories. I mean, I'm so glad you did that. Jonah Barley, I feel like he's, excuse me, going to hug me through the screen there. That probably doesn't surprise you, Anita.
Not at all. That would be Jonah.
Yeah, he was someone who I made some notes as I watched the film about each of these individuals. You know, Jonah was bubbly, upbeat. You said never worried that someone would take advantage of him because he was very willing to speak up for himself. But he was also seemed to be a very loving, outgoing person. Tell me more about how you would describe him.
Jonah was very loving, very outgoing. He was the type of a person that just wanted to know the world. Everywhere he went, he had this big smile on his face, and he just welcomed everyone. He's a kid that had this heart of gold that you love me, I'm going to love you back. If you don't love me back, I'm going to still love you, because that was just who Jonah was. Typical kid, so, you know, kids get in trouble. He was a teenager. Mom had to stay on that teenage kid, and he would go places, and he would come back and say, Mom, well, I tried to make sure I handled this situation right because I want to do the right thing. And he just would always keep us laughing. It's just some of the things that would come up and would literally come out. You're like, Jonah, where does these things come from? He was that type of kid that, you know, it's very sad with him being gone, but at the same time, his legacy definitely lives on. He was so outgoing that it's almost like he's not gone. Because when we talk about him, even now, the whole family still laughs at the things that Jonah did.
He was a great dresser. He had some serious threads in some of those pictures.
Oh, Jonah would dress. Do you hear me? Mom couldn't go out any old kind of way because I'm just a laid-back person. And he was like, Mom, you're always shopping. You're always buying for us. Now it's time for you to get something for yourself. It's time for you to throw those sneakers out. So
he's giving you a hard time about what you're
giving
wearing?
Giving me a hard time. I said, Jonah, these are comfortable. When you get my age, you'll realize they're comfortable. So, you know, I took his advice. We went out. They took me out, helped me pick out a pair of shoes, a pair of sneakers. I bought the sneakers. He's like, Mom, when are you going to ever wear the sneakers? I said, well, Jonah, they're white. I don't want them to get messed up.
and speaking of your age, I don't want to dwell on your age here, but look, there's an amazing story in this film about what happened on your birthday in the movie theater.
Oh,
you
gotta tell the story. Oh my God. We were went to see, I cannot remember the movie.
Heaven is for Real?
Heaven is for Real. Thank you so much. And the movie theater was packed. It was jam-packed. And he stands up. And I'm looking at him, I'm like, oh my God, what is he doing? He goes, excuse me, everyone. Today is my mom's birthday. Can you all help me celebrate by singing happy birthday to my mom? And I just cried, and I'm like, oh my God. He knows I hate crying.
He got so the whole movie theater?
He had the
singing
whole
happy birthday to you.
Movie theater sing happy birthday to me, yes.
What an amazing young man.
Yes.
When he was killed, he was how old?
He was 17.
I mean, what did you think about his future? What kind of future did you envision?
I definitely seen Jonah going on to New York. He was so into fashion. He wanted to go to FIT. And I told him, I said, that would be great because that's where I wanted to go. So now you can pursue what I didn't pursue. And I seen all that happening for him. And to have his life taken so suddenly, that was literally one of my first thoughts. Like, this kid was going to go to New York. He was going to be somebody. And he would always tell me, Mom, oh, I can't wait till I'm done with school. I'm ready to be done with school. I said, Jonah, you just need that degree. You want to know it for yourself where you don't have to depend on no one else telling it to you. And he was pushing, and he was going to get that degree. And I could see right now, I say sometimes, oh yeah, Jonah would be calling me right now because he would be in New York.
So Jonah was 17 years old. J.R. Johnson was 25. Is that right?
He was 25 years, 10 months, and one day.
25 years, 10 months, one day. And J.R.'s mother is Lentori Johnson, who you will see in the film. And again, if you're just joining us, we're talking about the film Move that you can see next week at the Little Theater on Tuesday and Friday nights with Q&As with the filmmaker afterwards. It is in relation to the August 19th, 2015 mass shooting outside the Boys and Girls Club that took the lives of three young men in our community. You just heard about Jonah Barley. J.R. Johnson was 25, and I thought there was something really admirable about the way Lentori and the filmmakers share that J.R. had a fear but also a joy about becoming a dad because he knew, you know, it might be tight to provide, but I am going to love these children. And had how many kids?
He had two children, a boy and a girl.
A boy and a girl, and they were how old when he was killed?
5 and 4.
Tell me about what kind of father he was.
J.R. was a great father. He was a hands-on father. He loved his children. He wanted to give them so much. Early on when he had his oldest one, Jaquil required surgery. He had a twisted intestine. And we all went to the doctor that day. We didn't know what was wrong with him. And JR being JR, and everybody who knows him knows exactly where I'm coming from. The doctor explained to us what they thought after the x-rays were done. He got on the computer that was in the room. He pulled up all of the information. Now, mind you, they had left this computer on. He accessed the diagnosis that they had given. He cried because he has such fear for his baby. But even with those tears, I took such joy with JR. Because JR, I tell folks all the time, he was so smart. He was brilliant. And he had lost so much hope behind things that had happened to him in his short life. But those babies, they bought it back. He loved them with all his heart. And I can remember him saying, "Mama, my baby's gotta be in here for that surgery. But he can't be alone and I can't be here because I can't take it." I spent every night at that hospital. He'd come during the day, be there for his baby. But I spent every night there with Jaquill until he would return home. And I tell everyone, JR never left home. His children, that was their home, and it continues to be their home. So they were much loved by a man who felt he wanted to give them so much more. You know, much is said in our community a lot of time about absentee father. Well, let me assert to you, JR was never an absentee father. Never.
You said in the film that his loss impacts those kids still all the time.
It does.
Do they ask?
They still, because he was their Superman. He would come home, and once JR walked in that door, the whole house would just be full of noise and laughter and joy, because he'd take them and fly them around the house, set them on top of the refrigerator, all in your way while you're trying to cook dinner, you know. And they would squeal and holler, "Daddy, Grandma, tell Daddy, get me down, get me down." And as soon as he would take them down after I would, you know, protest and beg him to take them down, "Daddy put me back, Daddy put me back." And you're trying to do dinner at the same time. And one of the best things I can tell people about is he finally got a job. Finally got a job he thought they would afford him the ability to provide for his children the way he wanted to provide for them. First paycheck he got that Saturday, we went shopping. And he tried to spend every dime on them, every dime, and he bought them lunch. And he was working what he called his pizza job and his final good job. And he told them that Saturday when we were out, "I won't forget," he said, "next check Daddy get, you can have it all. We'll do this again." Well, that was Saturday. He quit the job, the part-time, on Monday. And on Wednesday, my child was gone. Their father was gone. And they went through counseling, and that just stopped in recent times. There's times when they still cry, and we kind of hold each other up because they know sometimes Grandma's sad. And so they'll say to me, "Grandma, you sad because you miss Daddy?" And I tell them, "Yes." And they said, "Me too." And so I recognized the fact that it's going to be important, as been shared with me through the counselor, to continue the counseling at different stages of their life. Because, see, he won't be there for many things a father should be there for, and he would have wanted to be there for. He won't be there as he did in times past. When Jemiah graduated from pre-K to kindergarten, and from Jaquill from kindergarten to first grade, he won't be there when they graduate from high school. He won't be there when they take a vow with someone they may come to love, as he did their mother. He won't be there for his grandchildren, as I have been for mine. And I'll tell you, that would have meant the world to him to be there.
Lentore, I hope that there's any comfort at all, you can look back at your son and understand what a remarkable person he was. The kind of person who got a paycheck and could not wait to go tell his kids, "This is all for you."
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's the measure of a dad.
He was, mm-hmm. truly. And I feel, and I'd always tell him that. I would always say to him, JR, it's never going to be a surprise to me who you are, what you are. It's going to surprise you, not me. It's not going to happen.
The whole studio is crying. He brought us all down. And Tam, everybody is reaching for Kleenexes here when Tori is telling this story. And I hope that listeners are hearing this and feeling this, because sometimes when we talk about, again, violence in our community, we forget that there are real human stories. Yes. That's what the film MOVE helps us do, is see those stories, then also, as we're going to do as we go throughout this hour, connect it to the issues that our community needs to face. Firearms, accessibility, how people get guns, and how we prevent that in the future. And that's what Tam Little's remarkable film does. I want to turn to Tammy Burnett, who's here, who's the mother of Raekwon Manigault, who you can slide over if you could, get a little closer to that microphone. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
And Raekwon was 19 years old.
Yes.
And so why don't you tell me about Raekwon?
Well, Raekwon was a loving, outgoing kid, full of life, love. He's a crazy kid.
He was very particular in the film. Whether it's fashion, clothes, hair, everything had to be very particular.
Yes.
For Raekwon.
That's Raekwon, even with his bedroom. He had the cleanest bedroom in the house, including mine.
Where does that come from?
That was just him. That's how he was raised. He just kept it up. His sisters, they don't care. They have rollers, beads, baby dolls, shoes, everything, everywhere. He even knew when they would come into his bedroom. Sit on his bed. They didn't fix his cover back right after he made his bed. And he'll know someone was sitting on my bed. Yeah, you were in my room. But yeah, everything was particular with Raekwon.
All the way down to the shoelaces.
Yes. Everything. And that was an everyday thing for Raekwon. Every day before he would put on a pair of his sneakers, he would wash them first. Even the day he died, I can't forget, he got up to get ready for work and he washed his sneakers, and the fan had broken because he put them in front of the fan and dry them. He kicked his fan over and broke the fan. So he took it, the air conditioner from the living room, it protrudes outside. So he took them outside and set them on top of the air conditioner outside. I couldn't stop laughing. I thought he was really kidding, but he really left them there while he took a shower and got dressed.
You know, I mean, it's a small thing, but it's a big thing because he cares about how the world sees him. Mm-hmm. He has had a lot of pride.
Yes, he did.
Tell me a little bit more about his personality. When you think about him, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
Oh, wow. Just a silly kid that's so full of life. I mean, he have jokes for days. I mean, he wasn't an angry person. He makes everyone laugh. And just to know him is to love him. If you know Raekwon, you definitely fall in love, because not only was he a handsome kid, he was just full of laughter and love, just silly. All around silly kid. The things he would say, like, it's things that you wouldn't even imagine saying. You know, I don't know where he get it from. Just funny. He just kept us all going, you know. And I can honestly say it hasn't been the same since he's been gone.
Jonah Barley was 17. Johnny J.R. Johnson was 25. Raekwon Manigault was 19. These were people taken from our community in a mass shooting in the summer of 2015. And are you angry today? What is the main emotion that comes to your mind when you think about how he was lost?
I'm hurt. I am hurt. I mean, it's like my soul has been altered. It's just agony that I've never felt before. Angry? I can say I'm angry about the way the situation was handled. As far as our as the judicial system.
Yeah, and listeners, we're going to explain exactly what she means by that in our second half hour, because the film tells that story in a way that I think is tough at times to take. We'll explain more of what we mean by that. And Tam Little, can you just remind our listeners again, for people who may remember the mass shooting outside the Boys and Girls Club, but why people were there? What was going on?
There was a Stop the Violence basketball game specifically to reduce the violence in our community. That's why all the young men were there.
How many people were there that night?
There were hundreds. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of
a few hundred? Yeah.
Men, yeah. Women, young children. Yeah.
A Stop the Violence basketball game at a place that offers community support, love, peace. It's just, you know, maybe it is trite or naive to say something like this, but it seems like the last place where something would happen. It seems like a place where people could feel safe and strong. But the film also explores the kind of firearms that were used here. And so it's not easy to do, but I think it's important that you understand that you know, the filmmakers wanted you to see what happened. How were these firearms acquired, and what happened to the people who used them? So in July of 2015, just a few weeks before the shooting, the film tells the story of Johnny Blackshell, who was 22 years old, and two accomplices. Tam, they broke into a home, and they stole a 100-pound gun safe to get those firearms. Mm-hmm. And as you tell your show your viewers, the contents of the gun safe that they stole in July of 2015 included the following: a 12-gauge shotgun, a 40-caliber rifle, and 200 rounds of live ammunition, all legal and legally acquired where they were. And then an AK-47, two AR-15 semi-automatic rifles, and numerous 30-round clips, all in that gun safe. What do you want viewers of the film to take away from that, Tam?
I want them to take away the fact that there are legal ways that you can obtain firearms, but those that that have illegal weapons, especially if they are in this safe, they were in the safe, these deaths could have been prevented, because the ones that they had stolen, they were illegal, and we're still, you know, the gentleman that where it was stolen, as Tammy was saying, it's the judicial system. We're not quite sure what legal ramifications were taken in regards to that. But I think my goal was to begin a dialogue about those illegal weapons, and also to talk about, if you are a gun owner and your guns are stolen, you need to report those guns. But first of all, first and foremost, they should be legal weapons.
Yeah, I mean, maybe someone would argue, well, a lot of people have safes, and a lot of people who are legal gun owners lock their guns up. I mean, these guys took the entire safe, I guess.
They did.
So even the idea that we can safely secure our firearms doesn't always end up that way.
Right.
And the way that they are used. So let me ask the three moms at the table here how they feel about the issue of firearms in this community, and if you actually see any solutions. I mean, Anita Barley, mother of Jonah Barley, I want to know how you feel about it, but do you also, do you see it changing? Do you see solutions to this problem?
I believe there's a solution to all the problems. It's just taking the initiative to do what it takes. We don't have this in all the communities, just mainly in the city of Rochester. We don't have it in the suburbs, so I feel like more should be implemented in helping our young people. You know, I watched a documentary with LeBron's and how he, you know, helped the young guys out with the basketball. Guys love basketball. You know, there has to be something. And then I do know, as working with children, a lot of time kids, it takes a lot to build trust in them, and it's easy to say you're going to do something and not follow through with it, and now you've lost them all over again. And it, you know, the example is you see a building today and tomorrow it could be torn down and you're trying to remember what building was there, but then you'll see them building something back there and it's not built overnight. It takes time. So it's so easy to tear something down, but it takes a lot to build something up. And if you're going to start something, you should continue with it. You can't start it, you can't say it and not do it. And I realize that is a lot with our children today. Things should not just be start. We, in a community where everything is so quick and at fast pace, that the adults sometimes forget what they promised or what they said they were going to do or what they were going to start. And if you start it, you must finish it. You know, get into the schools, get into these streets and help them out, because everyone has a heart. It's how can you help that heart? How can you help that heart to realize there is somebody that loves you? There is somebody that cares for you. There is somebody that see that you can succeed. And a lot of time they don't have that. And if they're not getting that, where do they go from there?
There is a there is a quote in the film of a young man who says the following, and I was so moved, I played it back. I want to read this quote to you and for us all to think about this. Quote, get more involved in kids' lives. If you don't, you'll never understand what they're going through. Sometimes we feel like there's no one to love us. These bonds are not being built. You don't have to be my original mother to love me.
That's it.
Wow. I mean, just, Tam, as a filmmaker, I mean, that, if there's a single message that came out of that film for me, that might have been it.
That was it. That was it. And this is a 17-year-old kid that said that.
Oh,
he told us the solution to the problem.
Sometimes we feel like there's no one to love us. These bonds are not being built. Just imagine kids growing up with that feeling. And just imagine why we allow that to happen. Lentori Johnson, how do you feel about the issue of firearms in this community, and do you have hope that there are solutions there?
How do I feel? I'm angry. I don't make any bones about it. But I use mine to go into the community. I'm in rec centers every Monday evening. And the children that I encounter in those centers, they give me hope. They give me hope. Because faced with what we're facing with in this world now, and as crazy as the adults seem to be, it's the children who I encounter that every time I walk away, I tell people, I said, sometimes I go and I really don't feel like going, but I go. And I go because I benefit. I benefit more from them than they probably know or think they benefit from me.
I think you're bringing a lot to them, but I understand the point you're making. They need you, I think.
They lift me. They give me a brightness that, yeah, there is a light, and I have to keep walking forward to it. And in regards to the guns, let me say this. First of all, even though this young man had those guns locked up, I'm looking at what's happening not only here in Rochester, but throughout the world. We are so messed up in our thoughts about these rights, about these guns, till we have no value of life. We have the NRA, who doesn't even want to attempt to look at common sense approaches. It would probably help to limit. Guns are not going away. They're never going away. But for us not to have a conversation, for us to not have insight into how corrupt the gun community has become, and them not valuing our life, and I want to be more specific than that, not valuing the lives of individuals in the brown and black community, I hate that. I hate that with a passion. I really do. Because, see, I'm looking at the fact, and sometimes I have to get off the computer, and sometimes I got to push away from some of the groups, that here's the deal. Lord knows, you got people who want these guns, and some of them have amassed arsenals. Now, you need that much protection, in quote unquote, for protection of yourself and your family. But yet you can leave your home. And when you leave your home, who is protecting that armory that you build up and have left behind? It's no coincidence that these guns are coming into our community. And people can fool themselves all they want. It's not. The only variance is in the urban communities, there's mostly homicides. In the suburban communities, if guns are accessible, there's suicide. That's the only variation that's happening in this. But our children, they're dying in mass. And you know what? Thank you for the opportunity to be here today. Let me say that to you. Because often, they don't talk about our children. And when I say our children, I mean in the brown and the black community. Here today, gone tomorrow. But J.R. was not an imagination to me. Their sons were no imagination to them. We miss them every day. I'm tormented with his loss.
Tammy, how do you feel?
Me, myself, I'm like Miss Lintory. It's not a coincidence that they're reaching our communities and getting into the hands of our children. And I also think by law they should have, you know, a little more stiffer penalties. And then maybe they'll think twice, because they can be 20, 22 years old, commit a homicide, do 25 years, and come out and they're, what, 45, 50 years old. They think they can live again. I've heard them say it before. So I think if they have stiffer penalties, maybe they'll think twice before they pull the trigger, being that we can't stop people from accessing the guns, you know, gun owners. We can't stop them. But if you put stiffer penalties on these people that don't respect human life, they have no value for human life, I think that they'll think twice before they pull the trigger to take a life.
Well, speaking of sentences, let's talk a little bit about what happened to the people who committed these crimes. And in this case, you did have a conviction and three life sentences for and help me out here, Tam, as I go back through my notes here. Three life sentences, right?
Yes, for Johnny Blackshell Jr.
For Johnny Blackshell Jr. did get convicted, three, and he will serve three life sentences.
Yes.
But he was not the only one in the car on the night of the mass shooting. Yeah. And Jalen Everett, at the age of 20, was charged with murder, initially found guilty, I think in second degree. Judge Doug Randall then, weeks later, threw out the verdict after hearing from a juror that another juror had used racist comments, ignored instructions not to watch media, and behaved inappropriately. So the judge decided that this is not a valid verdict, and we've got to do this again, which... you know, I've gotten to know Judge Randall, and I understand he feels like there are standards that have to be met. But what happened was, in January of this year, we got the new verdict. And the new verdict was not guilty on all counts. And I think, Tam, fair to say that some of the people that you talked to and some of the people that the news media coverage that your film relied on were frustrated that second trial... You felt like there were some limitations on what could be presented as evidence, yes?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes. I think I wanted to give the audience the ability to determine what happened, because with the first verdict of not guilty, if I would have just shown, okay, he's no longer guilty, what happened? And I think I wanted to give a voice to the mothers to say, you know, the first jury heard a great deal of evidence, but the second jury didn't have as much evidence. And, you know, we were all in the courtroom and we knew what was being said. And when the jurors were outside of, you know, the conversation, so we were actually hearing what they could not hear. And so I think I wanted to be able to explain to the audience, because that would have been my first question. Well, what happened? Why was he found not guilty on that second occasion?
And so you've got Jalen Everett at the age of 20, who was charged with murder, found not guilty, walks out of court, and the prayer expressed by multiple family members of these young men, again, and we should keep saying their names, Jonah Barley, J.R. Johnson, Raekwon Manigault, who were killed that night. The prayer was that Jalen Everett would learn from this and have a chance to sort of find a productive path in life. And within months, rap videos surface, and Tam, I think fair to say that the feeling is that he was glorifying getting off on murder charges, mm-hmm. and glorifying gun violence and kind of drug culture.
Right.
You made a choice as a filmmaker. Obviously, you wanted to tell that story, but you wanted to be sensitive to not do certain things. Tell me a little bit about that, and then I will ask our other guests, you know, what their reaction was when they heard that Jalen Everett was out there doing that.
Well, I think the mothers were pretty much telling the story. I made sure that the news coverage told the story. There wasn't any dialogue from me. I wanted to make sure that I gave the audience all the information. So it was information, and they have to determine, is this right or wrong? How do you feel morally about what
Jalen was doing?
What he was doing. And I ensured that there were things that I ensured put in place in the movie to be sensitive, especially to the mothers, that when they wouldn't hear any of the lyrics, that we blocked out the tag names or any YouTube or any references to the video so that people did not go, because I don't want them to be, or any young people be influenced by that, but I wanted to show just where have we gone to in our community where this is okay and it's not okay, showing, okay, we have this society, or just, you can't legislate morality, but you have to see, hey, why have we've gotten to a place where it's okay to do that. You know, if, as a parent, I would say, no way, you're not going to do that. And so there's something there to say to adults, to say, how do we get here as adults? Why aren't we mentoring children? Why aren't we, and that's any type of child. How could you allow your child to do that? And to say to children, do you think this is right? Why do you think this is right or wrong? So it was twofold.
Yeah, and it's a free speech issue,
yes.
that the film makes clear that you don't have to like Jalen Everett going out after getting acquitted on murder charges, but he can go out and put together a rap mm-hmm. video, and mm-hmm. he can do that. And mm-hmm. Anita Barley, the mother of Jonah Barley, do you remember what was your first thought when you learned that he was doing that?
Well, when I heard of him doing the rap video, as a woman, a guy, I can only speak for myself. I'm a firm believer that in life we do reap the things that we sow. You know, at the end of the day, you might had to stand before a judge, but we all eventually have to stand before our true and living judge. And if you have anything to do with that, I mean, at some point you're going to have to answer for your actions. I don't know this kid, and I refuse to allow anyone that stronghold over my life. If you're going to go on, I'm going to have to go on too. Yeah, they could have locked you up. You could be dead. Anything could happen to you. It's not going to bring our children back. You know, and I'm the type of person, I wish no ill will on anyone. My first thing when we heard of a second trial, it shocked me. And then I was thinking, okay, if this kid is getting another trial, and then my mind started thinking different. You know, in life we perish from lack of knowledge. When you become knowledgeable of things, then you kind of see things in a different perspective. And when he was acquitted the second time around, I felt like God gave this kid another chance. What are you going to do with your second chance? And that's with anything in life. That's with us adults. Mm-hmm. If we get another chance, to me, we should do what's right with our second chance. I can't sit here and get angry and say, you need to get it together. You know, you got another chance, because all I'm doing is stressing myself out. And that's not my life.
Mm. Montori, your thoughts when you heard about the videos?
Very different from Anita, but Anita's a unique person. She really is. When I heard the verdict, see, because we knew what the public doesn't know, what the news coverage did not focus in, the depth of the story that needed to be told that is still yet untold. We knew about how much suppression happened. We knew that all of these individuals were part of a gang. Even Judge Randall suppressed that could not even be said in the courtroom because of the prejudicial that went along with it. And that troubled me. And I'll say this to you because I've said it to anyone else and I'm not holding back anything. I've sat on juries before. I have no plans to ever sit on another. In earnest, I have no plans.
You've lost entire confidence in the justice system?
I will not. Not in the entirety, because I know. You know, we complain a lot of time in our community, things that happen, and it's righteous, about how police officers sometimes abuse the system, about how sometimes the plight of our children in the judicial, and more especially the jail sentences, and I agree with that. But these people did an earnest work. I said something at the start of it, and I didn't know that it would come to pass. I said, listen, I don't want y'all to give me just anybody. I want to know what the jury might not know. I want to know as close to a certainty as I can that you have the right people that perpetrated this, because it needs to be dealt with. And justice, that's justice. As Anita said, we're never getting our children back. But the hope is that they pay for what they do, because we have to stop this plight that's going on in our community. Our community. We have to. I didn't know it was going to come true. You make no mistake, they had the right people. And if you go by what happened in these last two trials, then you would have to ascribe to the fact that Johnny Blackshell drove the car. Johnny Blackshell fired the AK-47 and the .44 caliber, all in a split second as you watch this film. See, what a lot of folks don't realize, we had to sit there every trial and watch a film that showed for the last time our children's in life and then their death. We saw it every time because of videos that surrounded the Boys and Girls Club that night and how juries could have arrived at the fact that there wasn't fire coming from the rear of that vehicle as well as the front passenger. I do not know. And maybe it's not for me to know. But I do know this. I feel, this is my opinion, they're guilty. They were guilty, but they were set free by man. But we all have to answer, and I'll agree with Anita on that. To the Lord, we all will come to know one day and stand before. We will do that.
Tammy, your thoughts on the verdict in January and then what we've seen so far from Jalen, who I don't know this person. I hope for redemption for everybody. I hope for better actions from everybody, but I wonder how it hits you as a mom.
Well, as a mom, first and foremost, me as a parent and a woman, I don't care how old my child is, I would have never allowed my child to make a video of that type, knowing the situation at hand. I would have never allowed that to happen. First of all, I felt like Ms. Lintori. I felt as though they are guilty. They were set free by man. And again, they have someone else to answer to. I mean, I will pray that they will take this second chance and turn their life around. But as we see, they're glorifying it. So the way I feel, if they don't kill someone else, someone will kill them. That's how I feel.
Well, in our remaining minutes, I want to tell you a couple of things. First of all, the film Move, showing next week at the Little Theater, and you ought to know a couple things. You got a chance to see it next Tuesday at 7 p.m., and the film is going to be showing with a panel discussion afterward. Now, Tam Little, the filmmaker, will be at both panel discussions next week. Is that right? And the mothers that you're hearing on our discussion today will be there. Lentori Johnson will be there on the 12th. That is next Tuesday. And Anita and Tammy will be there on the 15th. That is next Friday. So you're going to have the filmmaker and the moms involved with having this conversation. It's going to be strong, powerful, and it needs to be done. The film is not a long film. It's about an 80-minute long film, and then a discussion. So 7 p.m. next Tuesday night at the Little Theater, 7 p.m. next Friday night at the Little Theater, the 12th and the 15th. That's next week. The film is part of the one-take documentary series that the Little Theater is so proud to host. And our friend Kevin Hicks reminds us that the screening on the 15th is part of the Black Cinema Series sponsored by the Association of Black Journalists in the Little Theater. So really important things, and I hope that you can set aside some time in your schedule next week to do that. But in our remaining minutes here, I can tell you that what you're going to see, without giving it too much away, as the film draws to a close, is a lot of positive energy, mm-hmm. a lot of really remarkable things happening in our community. The amazing people at Teen Empowerment. How many times do I say those words together? Teen Empowerment, some of the most amazing people in this city. Mm-hmm. And Anita, what is the most positive part of this to you? I mean, I know you've lost Jonah, and you're right, Jonah's not coming back. But we have to build a community and a city and a world where there's fewer moms who go through what you go through. So what gives you optimism, if anything does?
I definitely would never want a parent to experience what we had to experience and had to go through. So for everyone to come out and just view what Tam has put together, that it touched the heart of so many people, that it doesn't just stop there, but it would just go throughout our community and just help a worldwide of people. Because a lot of times people sit back in their homes and they don't know what's going on. But knowing that there is a way that can help others out there, I would love to see that help.
Okay. Lentori, does anything give you optimism?
The young people. Tam gives me optimism. I used to babysit her.
She did.
She was my little girl. And she's grown into such a beautiful woman and a caring person. And I'm very thankful. And I want to share that with you. So thankful that you cared enough to help us keep our children in remembrance, to do something that hopefully will make a difference, will put a dent in this thing, this epidemic that we're all suffering through, this gun violence. So I thank you for that. And if I don't have any other opportunity to say it, I want to say it to you.
Thank you.
I love you for that.
I love you too. I love you too.
And most importantly, I want to leave you with the sharing of the fact that I am working along with some other ladies in the community, quite a few of them, to do a remembrance quilt on behalf of all of our loved ones that we've lost through gun violence. And if you would be so kind, if they would like anyone in the community to contribute to it, we want to do that because we need to keep this in the face of our community to make the changes that are really necessary.
How can people contribute?
They can contribute by, there's no money involved. Just contact me, and if you would like, I can give a phone number.
Please do it.
That would be 749-3494, and they can submit whatever they want of the loved one that they have lost, because it will be put into a quilt. And that quilt will be on exhibit in June. So we're asking that people do this before March 31st.
If you know someone, if you've lost someone to violence, and you want to make sure that person's remembered as part of this quilt, once again, Lentori Johnson's phone number is, go ahead.
749-3494.
Okay. Tammy, some thoughts on if anything gives you optimism.
I think what gives me optimism is to you know, being that it penetrated so many people in our community, that we can just unite as one and stop this senseless violence. Come on, it's time for us to stand together as one. It's our time.
The film gives you some beautiful moments. There's a Love the Hood event that Teen Empowerment did where there's some wonderful things going on. Talk about mentors, different programs in our community to make sure that this is a complex problem. I mean, it's a very complex problem that has a lot of different pieces to it. But there are people and things happening. That's part of what MOVE will aim to make sure you're aware of. But then we can all ask ourselves, what's our role? You know, where do we stand on this? What are we doing to help? Tam Little's film is going to really impact you next week. Thank you for being here.
Thank you.
And again, I wish you didn't have to make the film, but I'm really glad you did. Really amazing stuff. And to Anita Barley, the mother of Jonah Barley, Lentori Johnson, mother of J.R. Johnson, and Tammy Burnett, mother of Raekwon Manigault, may no one go through what you've gone through, but if they do, I hope that they have the grace and strength that you show. And I'm just so appreciative of your time. Thank you for being here.
Thank you for having us.
All right, Rob Braden is the engineer, and Audrey Sample is our intern, Megan Max producer. I'm Evan Dawson. Hope you have a peaceful afternoon, and we'll talk to you Wednesday on Member Supported Public Radio.